Let's look at what's going on in the market and some of what I think is going to drive where we go and how we get there from here. I'll talk about the IP sphere as it evolves, but let's build a, allow me to build a picture here. We have the world of the service provider and where it's headed that we talked about. And we have the world of the enterprise, which I would suggest hasn't gotten quite as far, although it's happened in a much compressed time frame. And we know, I believe, largely where it's going to go. And in the midst of all of this, some years ago popped up this thing called the internet. And let's take a look at how that evolved, because it gives us a model that I think we can follow for what's going to happen next. Now, first of all, it got a lot bigger, and we know that. But it's also changed, or is in the process of changing, I would say. And it's changing from the internet to something which I believe is going to be based largely on an architecture and a design that's being developed with a group called IP Sphere. And they're at ipsphere.org, I think it is. There's much more to find out about them if you're interested, but it's quite, I think, a telling collection of folks, because it's networking people, it's people like Oracle and IBM and HP on the application side, and it's carriers and service providers around the world. So what it's headed to is a world of packet transport in the middle, surrounded by policy which delivers services. And the policy and the transport part is where the service providers come in this model. And if you think of each one of those spokes that you see up there, imagine any one of those being a carrier presenting itself on the one side to that transport layer where all the packets are running back and forth, and on the other side presenting itself to what is called a services layer. And the services are where the sort of heterogeneous interconnected network of both traffic and providers presents itself in a ubiquitous policy towards a service layer, which allows people to use that network as if it were one, instead of the many that it's actually permanently going to be made up of. There's enormous detail behind it, but it's essentially what's been created. And if we imagine how that evolves, I'll make one prediction, which is that the service provider that we know, and the concept of the service provider network as it moves into that cloud, what it's going to turn into is essentially that architecture. And as it does that, we will have an expanded example of this service delivery vehicle. Call it the IP Sphere architecture or reference architecture, but it'll be essentially a resource that we can use as we run our enterprises for the purposes of networking in a much more intelligent way. And there's some detail about how that will happen that can be found talking to those folks more about it. How does that then relate to what the enterprise is going to do? And how do we use the fact that that's going on? Well, there's a couple ways I think it can help us. First of all, a couple of simplifying assumptions. This lower left-hand corner that shows the business process and the applications written around it. Let's make a presumption that the database and the applications that surround it are actually held in a very small number of places. Database, not data. Data will go everywhere. Databases will not. And applications will not. It's not sensible to have applications multiply themselves other than by delivery via services. So we're going to have a fairly small number of those in most of our enterprises. And then we're going to have to surround that with a service layer. And one could digress into service-oriented architectures here and what that means and how we get there. And again, it's not the detailed purpose of this discussion. And there's no ironclad answer to those assumptions. But presumably, for the purposes of today, let's call it a service layer, which is going to wrap itself around that data center and that application and be used as a vehicle to project the application processing and the database all around the world. And there are several ways in which that can happen. One of the ways is to use a dedicated access with or without the public network, and another is to use the public network itself. And I would suggest that most enterprises are going to do some combination of both. It's not sensible for there to be a private-only network, and it's not sensible to assume that everyone will depend entirely on the public network, but the service policy that's needed will have to be consistent for that projection of information to make its way out across the world. So what should we expect networks to do if all of that is going to happen? And we have kind of a, what I'd call an and problem here. Because the networks obviously have to get big, they have to scale, and they have to serve the global campus. And they have to be fast, because performance is critical. And they have to be safe, so clearly security is important in all of this. And they have to be smart, because they've got to be aware of the applications in order to reconcile distances and devices and build service handling into all of these things. So the network has to be smart. And it has to be proven, because we can't really afford to bet our network future and bet our lives on this evolution of things, all needed all at the same time, and just hope that it will work when we try it. But the big change that has to happen, and if there's a message for today in all of this, it has to be open. We have got to change, as an industry, from multiple simultaneous competing proprietary technologies into a much more open, available, standards-based way which presents the elements of a network at whatever layer they may be so that they can interact probably largely through that services layer and allow us to build scalable solutions that we can rely on to run the business. This has not been the way this industry has been built, and it is the way this industry is going to have to be built going forward in order for us to serve the global campus and to solve for the perfect storm. Lots and lots of work to be done, but people, and this is not only Juniper, but we certainly want to be a member of this team. We have to stand up and we've got to open these networks and we've got to open these technologies, not fearing that somehow we'll lose our market or that we'll lose our customer base or that the only reason people don't buy from someone else is because they can't get away from us. It has to be the opposite condition. It has to be people will do more with us as we make their choices available to them. And so finally, as a last point, what's the plan for our future and what do we do as enterprise operators and owners ourselves, or as suppliers bringing solutions to those folks who are dealing with these storms and signing those financial statements and reconciling technology? There are a couple things that are critical. First, we have to chart our course. There are some things as enterprise owners, as CIOs, as people who drive the decisions, we have to set priorities. We have to set the business process priorities because this is a large problem and we can't solve it by just declaring that all of it needs to be fixed. We have to be able to set those priorities so that as the extended enterprise around us works with us to solve it, we all know what's most important. We need a plan for application development that realizes that the legacy applications that aren't aware of distance, that don't work on all these devices that we now want to use every day, have to do that somehow, and it's not going to happen by redesigning all the applications, because we can't afford to do that. Dave is going to come out next from Google and talk about how many of us as consumers are developing expectations for how technology is going to be presented to us at work as well. And that is going to put a lot of pressure on these legacy applications to do things they weren't designed to do, but they have to do, and no one's going to stop and rewrite them in order to do that. So we need a plan for how we integrate and incorporate and extend the life of those, not just wish they weren't here, or declare that the future will be solved when we get rid of them. The key element to do that, a network services strategy. We have to be aware of what's going on in the services development, in the architecture development, in that public network environment. We have to incorporate within our own enterprises a services understanding of how we're going to get that database in one place to those mobile tele workers all over the world. And that requires a services strategy that both we develop that's synchronous with our own enterprise needs, and also one which is aware of and consistent with services that are being developed to be carried over the public network, because we need both. And then finally, we need risk management, because this is not going to be cheap, and we can't build parallel solutions to make this be purely non-disruptive to the business. And we also can't afford to risk flash cuts overnight and turn one system off at midnight and turn the next one on at 12:01. So what are the trade-offs that we're willing to make in building parallel contingency plans, and how much overlay or duplicate cost are we willing to stomach in return for offsetting some of the business disruption risk, or vice versa? And there's no one answer. And then the second half of the equation, choosing our partners. And I would put at least two elements of criticality on this, although one could talk about this for the 30 minutes that you've indulged me today. One is alignment. Are the partners that I choose to help me aligned with my objectives? Are they here to help me get the maximum life out of my technology, or are they trying to churn it because they need an upgrade to make revenue targets? Are they trying to help me build this business because the needs that I have and the solutions that I'm after are the priorities that they have? And I'm not here to say that anyone in this industry doesn't do that. We all pick and choose based on what that alignment is relative to the needs that we have, but it's critical that we start with the most aligned relationship and partnerships that we can find. And then protect freedom of choice. And this is what the open network and opening these networks is all about. Because we cannot predict the future with the necessary precision to build successful enterprises. Period. So what do we do? Final thought. Incorporate the services requirements that you have in the enterprise, and let's do that for everything that we're trying to solve, and make sense of it as it relates to the rest of the resources we're going to need to use. Not only expect, but demand that the vendors that we choose when we make the decisions that support their research and development are bringing us open standards so that control over what we build and where our enterprises go and what our business priorities are, and flexibility to deal with those decisions and to change them as needed over the course of time rests with us. Because we're the ones that sign the front of the check. We're the ones that determine the rate at which this industry opens its technology. Because the industry will do what it is paid to do. And if we insist that this industry opens itself up, and we only pay when it does, we will gain control over the decision-making and the flexibility that's needed to plan for the future as best we can today, and then retain control in the replanning that will inevitably go on as the future takes its unknown course over time relative to the needs that we all have. So I'd invite you to join me in doing that. You have our commitment at Juniper to do that. And if you get a chance, make it a requirement anywhere and everywhere you go. Thanks very much. Enjoy your show. It's been a pleasure to talk with you this morning.